Hello, it is Ryan, and I was on a flight the other day playing one of my favorite social spin slot games on ChumbaCasino.com. I looked over the person sitting next to me, and you know what they were doing? They were also playing Chumba Casino. Coincidence? I think not. Everybody's loving having fun with it. Chumba Casino is home to hundreds of casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere, even at 30,000 feet. So sign up now at ChumbaCasino.com to claim your free welcome bonus. That's ChumbaCasino.com and live the Chumba life.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void or prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
With Lucky Land slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
Dearly beloved, we are gathered here today to... Has anyone seen the bride and groom?
Sorry, sorry, we're here. We were getting lucky in the limo and we lost track of time.
No, Lucky Land Casino, with cash prizes that add up quicker than a guest registry.
In that case, I pronounce you lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Daily bonuses are waiting. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Okay, round two. Name something that's not boring.
A laundry? Ooh, a book club. Computer solitaire, huh?
Ah, oh, sorry. We were looking for Chumba Casino. That's right. ChumbaCasino.com has over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. ChumbaCasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Mary redeemed a $50,000 cash prize playing Chumba Casino this year.
I was only playing for fun, so winning this was a dream come true.
Chumba Casino is America's number one social casino experience. It's serious fun. With over 80 casino-style games to choose from, you too could win life-changing amounts of cash. Be like Mary. Log on to ChumbaCasino.com and give them a whirl. That's ChumbaCasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void or prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details. The voice in the preceding commercial was not the actual voice of a winner.
With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
This is your captain speaking. We've got clear runway and the weather's fine, but we're just going to circle up here a while and get lucky. No, nothing like that. It's just these cash prizes add up quick. So I suggest you sit back, keep your tray table upright, and start getting lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Autosport podcast sponsor this week, once again, our friends at BetterHelp. And this week they want us to focus on stress. Have you ever felt stressed? Even stressed watching Formula One? Imagine working in a Formula One team. That's a pretty stressful job, but you have always got that support network of a team. You win as a team and lose as a team. What about, though, if you're stressed at home? What about if you're stressed with your job? Sometimes the people that you can talk to about your stress other people you can't talk to, if that makes sense. So get someone in your corner, someone from BetterHelp. And if you stick around to about, I reckon, 30, 31 minutes into the show today, we'll talk about an exclusive discount code that you can score with our friends at BetterHelp and how you can get on top of stress. Now, on with the show. From Autosport.com and Autosport Magazine, I'm Martin Lee, and this is the Autosport Podcast. Well, Charles Leclerc made it two wins from three races with a dominant victory at Melbourne's Albert Park for the 2022 Australian Grand Prix. As once again, his early season title rival Max Verstappen retired later in the race with fuel issues. Red Bull Sergio Perez did what recently number two drivers have failed to do at Red Bull, and that is be in the hunt to pick up the points when Max couldn't, and he finished second. With George Russell picking up his first silverware for Mercedes with third on the podium, Lewis Hamilton finished fourth, and the two McLarens of Norris and Ricciardo fifth and sixth. Well, two safety car restarts would see Leclerc pull away from Verstappen both times, although the second restart was a close one, as Leclerc says he got some pickup, which meant he ran wide, coming into the start-finish straight, giving Verstappen at least a sniff of an overtake. On the podcast today, joining myself, Martin Lee, our UK-based F1 editor this week, although he'll be in Italy in a couple of weeks, Matt Q. In Australia, Luke Smith, and alongside Luke, editor of motorsport.com Australia, Andrew Van Leeuwen. Mate, you're no stranger to Melbourne, worked there many years. Is it good to have the crowds back?
Yeah, it's been a real sort of full circle moment, I think, for Melbourne as a city and Melburnians as people, because the Grand Prix in 2020, you know, the Friday the 13th of March, that's when COVID kind of kicked off in Australia and in Melbourne. And Melbourne really got, I think it was the most locked down city in the world throughout the pandemic. It really copped it very, very hard. when it came to the strict COVID measures we had in Australia. The city was so badly affected. So I think for the city to have the Grand Prix back, you know, there was never any guarantee it was going to come back, but it is back. Lockdowns are a thing of the past. Everyone's sort of getting on with life. It was a real sort of healing thing for this city, I think. And you could feel it. You could feel the whole city was excited, probably in a way that it's never been excited about the Grand Prix before, or at least not since the first one in 1996. So, you know, it was a special atmosphere. I know Luke didn't necessarily see a whole Australian Grand Prix last time he was here, but, you know, even I'm sure he can see the difference between, you know, the 2020 on the Thursday and what we had this weekend. It was awesome.
And not just Aussie motorsport that's really suffered, but the whole country has really been through it. I mean, look, everyone has been through it, but just the way that Australia chose, everyone chose their own path, right? And you guys, being an island, but a very big island, just decided to, you know, close borders. And even you and I have been talking over just on sort of chat and stuff through our the work that we do together. And even now you've moved to Perth, but even when you were leaving WA to go cover an event, if there was an outbreak, it meant you couldn't get home to your wife and kids. And Australia's really been through it. So I could tell from watching the coverage, it meant a lot to you.
It really did. And I mean, the numbers show it as well. I mean, there was nearly 420,000 people through the gates over 4 days, which is the highest ever four-day crowd for the Grand Prix. There's a lot of talk that it's probably the biggest multi-day sporting event in Australian history as well. So, like, they're big numbers. Today was, you know, how many did we have there today? There was 128,000. There today, not quite a record because they had to have caps on attendances due to hospitality staff shortages and stuff, but like huge numbers, huge buzz. It really was a very special weekend.
Luke, we've mentioned you already. You are there in the thick of the action. And once again, we see a dominant, a very quick Ferrari throughout the whole weekend, and Charles Leclerc converting that into some, you know, serious points once again. But actually, just a weekend of dominance where it didn't seem to me like it was ever really in doubt. And a car that, at, you know, at heavy fuel load, at speed, does look like it's a handful to drive, or at least the bouncing. But as the drivers have said, I'd rather have a quick car that was uncomfortable than a slow one and a Sunday afternoon drive. Charles Leclerc just putting his stamp after three races on this championship. How did you read and how did you rate today's race?
Yeah, it was brilliant once again from Leclerc. I think he's looking more and more like a driver who is capable of winning a championship. And I think that's something we've known for some time. Obviously, we saw his talents when he joined the F1 grid in 2018 with Sauber. And then with Ferrari, obviously, he's been very impressive right the way throughout. And I think that, and this is a point I made on Twitter a few days ago, I think that Leclerc's 2021 was massively underrated because he was beaten by Sainz in the points and Sainz scored four podiums to Leclerc's one. But it completely missed what It completely missed Leclerc's season, just how good it had been. And I think we're now starting to see Leclerc sort of in full swing and what he can, all of him at the peak of his powers, which is fantastic. And yeah, he was just completely untouchable today, I think, and all weekend. And in qualifying, his lap looked very, it was very controlled. It wasn't like it didn't look like a lap that he absolutely had to wring everything out of, but he produced a stunning effort to take pole by nearly 0.3. And then yeah, in the race, he was always in control, apart from, as you mentioned, that second safety car restart where Verstappen did run him a little bit close. Otherwise, he was absolutely in a league of his own throughout. He built quite a comfortable lead, and I'm sure when that first safety car came out, he thought, oh God, here we go again. But it was just a very commanding and impressive display by him. He's 34 points clear at the top of the championship now, which is obviously a huge lead to have after just three races. And I think it's obviously aided by all three of his main sort of, early title contenders, Verstappen, Sainz, Perez, all having at least one DNF. Russell is the man closest to him in the championship, which probably says quite a lot. 46 points clear for Verstappen as well, which is, again, huge gap to make up even at this stage. And it just feels like Ferrari are in a really good groove right now. And I think going to Imola, which may not be seen as the main home race for Ferrari, that would be Monza, but Imola is closer to Maranello, and it's another very important race for the Tifosi. I think it's a very good time to be wearing red and driving a red car.
You know, look at what Charles scored in the first three races, 26 points, 19 points, 26 points. George Russell behind him, the only other driver that's finished all three races. Let's go to Matt Q next. Matt, what do you make of that race today? Was it ever ever in doubt.
It was just a nice race, I think, wasn't it? After Bahrain, obviously, all the hype around the regulations and covering Saudi on the ground, that Australia felt like a bit of a palate cleanser. Everyone excited to be back, and it was a good race. No sort of DRS tomfoolery. It was. I don't think, you know, Verstappen, even before his issue, I don't think he quite had the pace to come at Leclerc. But it was just a nice race. I don't think we come away with too many, you know, too much controversy, too much bitterness. So that was a good thing to remark on. And yeah, with Leclerc, it was super impressive. You know, him sort of that back and forth over team radio, playing over, you know, can I go for fastest lap, or we think we've done enough, Charles, you can leave it. Oh, but can I go again? Sort of hesitating and then just going, yeah, okay, I'll leave it. You know, and then him saying after the checkered flag, you know, in the interviews, that's the first time we've been able to control a race. And I think coming into this weekend, I was having a chat with a mate and just sort of talking like, you know, if it wasn't for the fuel leak in Bahrain, then maybe Red Bull could have got back at him. And Vettel, you know, didn't hook up his qualifying lap in Saudi Arabia, so was a bit left on the table, even though, of course, he came to win. So, you know, on Ferrari's day, if they get their act together, on Red Bull's day, if they get their act together, can they just storm into the lead? But I think today we saw it's not that straightforward, that, you know, Ferrari, you know, maybe not emotional around it because it is just another team, but obviously people have a special place for Ferrari, and we're thinking, you know, can they sort of end their drought? Maybe within that we've always gone, you know, well, I hope they can win, but maybe, you know, they are fallible in quite a lot of ways. But I think, you know, today they showed just how strong they were. And then just an interesting point, I think, to throw ahead to Imola is both Charles and Charles Leclerc and Carlos Sainz were talking during the weekend about, you know, we've got some exciting things in the wind tunnel, got a good development to bring now. But they've really unlocked this car, and it's quite interesting to sort of hypothesize about what will happen in Imola, because if they bring some substantial upgrades, because it's a sprint race weekend, they've only got one practice session before qualifying, and then a practice session down overall. So it's a bit of a gamble, I think, to bring in that upgrade for Imola, because they've got, you know, a bit less track time. But the way they're stood at the moment, sort of, do you want to keep ahead or why risk it? I don't know.
Yeah, and of course that's all within the budget cap as well, and teams having to develop and choose those developments really, really carefully, and not go down any dead ends with this new set of regulations and wasting money, wasting time as well, and even just understanding these cars. Before we get any further down the grid, let's just talk about the general layout of the track. AVL, mate, you know Melbourne inside out, really. We've had some changes. Track's a bit wider in places, and then just before the teams went out for, was it quali or FP3, was it, they removed the DRS zone. So what are your thoughts on how that circuit gave us a bit of entertainment today?
Look, I think generally it is a step in the right direction with the track. At the end of the day, was today a classic race? Was there a crazy amount of overtaking? No. Daniel Ricciardo was talking about this after the race. You know, at the end of that, like, you can take a step in the right direction, but it is still a street circuit. There are still limitations. There are public parks and a lake and buildings and stadiums and things that you can't actually move. So all you can do is try and improve what you have. And I think that they did fundamentally do that. I think the circuit is better. Certainly in supercars, I mean, I follow supercars as well. It created some fantastic racing in supercars. It probably didn't necessarily create great racing in Formula One quite yet. Luke and I were discussing this in a video earlier in the weekend about whether four DRS zones was too many. I thought it was, but in hindsight, maybe it wasn't. Maybe that would have helped a little bit, having that extra zone in there. But, you know, anything that sort of makes the circuit faster and more spectacular, I don't think it certainly didn't harm the racing product. Albert Park's never been a great racing track. So it's probably a step in the right direction. And I think it was certainly, you know, the money they spent to do it was definitely worthwhile.
Talking of videos, check out on YouTube our Paddock Packdown video, Luke, that you're doing. Will that be out? Is that a Monday thing that we get that online?
Might be a Sunday thing today.
It's already filmed, and
it's with our wonderful video team, so hopefully they're going to be turning things around. But it's discussing Verstappen's title hopes. Are they already fading? What's the situation there? What have Red Bull got to do? I don't want to sort of poop too much of a downer on it. And Christian Horner afterwards was quite, he said, look, we're like barely 10% of the way through the championship, which is true. But 46 points is a big old gap.
Let's talk, Luke, a little bit about the championship battle. Was Max Verstappen ever able to challenge the Ferraris today once we got underway the cars in race conditions, because much of the chat over the weekend had been how Red Bull, once again, we're going to come to this with a, you know, a high top end speed, setting the cars up for race conditions, not necessarily optimized for quali. And yet as soon as the race began, it did seem apparent that Max was immediately either in some sort of conservation, whether he was carrying a problem, and as far as I can tell, they haven't talked about exactly what they were working on at the front of the car on the grid, or he was in tyre conservation, or was he really completely outgunned today by the Ferraris?
No, Red Bull were outgunned all weekend by Ferrari. They did struggle with the balance of the car right the way throughout the race weekend. Sergio Perez, he spoke after qualifying and said they kind of went in two different ways in terms of setup and stuff. And he said neither of them really worked that well. And Christian Horner, he said that they were never really within the right window. He said Ferrari were probably out of reach even if everything had been all smooth for Verstappen. So I think it was really just a case of that. Yeah, as Leclerc said, Ferrari could really control it, and that's true. Red Bull were never really within with a shout. This wasn't like Bahrain and Saudi Arabia. They were really a step behind, and I think that there's a lot for them to go away and sort of analyse. I mean, obviously the reliability issue, that's something that they need to find the answer to, otherwise it's gonna get even worse, this sort of like hole and situation they're in. But I think realistically there was never a chance that Red Bull were going to win today's race. Ferrari just had the car, in a better window, running better, and it was never going to really, I think, boil down to much of a fight at the front.
Have you got any more insight on what the fuel issue was? Because immediately after, when Christian was on Sky Sports, very, very evasive when they were saying, you know, what was it? Because, and that would point to me to it being something to do with the newly renamed Red Bull power unit, in that it let them down, but he didn't want to publicly criticize it because he knows exactly what they were saying. What was the problem on the grid, and is it any way related to what caused Max's stoppage? And he was saying, well, I don't really know what they were working on, and I don't really know what stuff. Of course he knows, but he didn't want to say. So that would, to me, point that he was just kind of protecting the team a little bit there while they investigate. Any insight on what stopped his race?
Yeah, I think it's more that you just want those answers, basically. So our press call with Horner was set for, I believe, 5:15 local time. And I went down to Red Bull then and ran into the PR, and he said, oh no, he's in debrief at the moment. Basically, he wants to get all of the answers before he talks to you guys, because then we can give you a full picture of sort of what's happened and what's been going on, which is, very, very sensible. Makes complete sense. And then we met with him and asked him sort of what's the diagnosis, and said it was a fuel system issue, but it was external to the tank, and he said that it was a totally separate issue to what happened in Bahrain. Apparently it wasn't related to what you mentioned pre-race, Martin, which was the hydraulics. They were topping that up, and Horner said that those two things aren't related. Said that the issues that have hit the sort of Red Bull powertrains, as you say, across obviously AlphaTauri, they've had some issues so far this season as well. He said that every single issue has been totally unrelated. So I think clearly a lot of work for them to do to get to the bottom of that. It's not the kind of way that you want to start a season, and it's something they do have to rectify very quickly. But Horner was he was, I think after the race he was pretty, he said, look, Max is totally well within his rights to be frustrated, and it's very disappointing for the team, obviously. And it's a big haul of points that they've lost. It's 36 points alone that Max has lost. It's 51 if you include Checo's lost haul from Bahrain as well. So there's a lot of ground they've lost, basically, and they need to get to the bottom of this soon.
Matt, I want to come to you next with your thoughts on Max's weekend and Red Bull as well. Just before I do, I'll let the listeners know that the Constructors' Championship looks like Ferrari on 104 points after three events, Mercedes on second. We should start a new feature called something like Who Would Have Thought? You know, and after the start of the season, who would have thought after three races, Mercedes would be second? Red Bull third are 55 points, 10 points behind Mercedes. McLaren in fourth, 24, and Alpine. And so Ferrari really starting to stretch away, and a big loss of points for Red Bull behind their rivals. Anyway, Matt, let's give us your thoughts on that battle at the front today, which maybe wasn't a battle at all in your eyes.
Exactly. I don't think it was. And it was separate. So like in Saudi, Verstappen didn't really get close to Leclerc on the first stint because he was struggling to unlock the hard tyres. And when he got off those, he was sort of right on the money, whereas there wasn't that obvious like excuse or reason for why Verstappen couldn't properly take the fight to Leclerc. It was just that, you know, and I don't think it's really, I don't mean that to say a disservice to Red Bull. I'm using it more to sort of hype up Ferrari. I just think they had a really, really strong race weekend, or particularly on Leclerc's side of the garage, and Red Bull weren't quite there. I don't think, you know, unlike Bahrain or Saudi, where, you know, Verstappen was sitting 1.5 seconds off and then sort of almost when he wanted to turn it up, he could get within that second and launch a DRS attack. That wasn't really coming. I didn't feel like we were ever building to that crescendo, which I think perhaps, you know, sort of taking a step back is a good thing. I don't think every race needs to be a DRS fest for the lead. It was quite nice to have sort of like just a more like meritocratic winner. I, you know, not to take anything away from the previous results, but, you know, Leclerc had that control. There wasn't sort of like, you know, to give credence to DRS, because it wasn't like a gimmick to sway the race one way or the other. It was almost a conventional win, if you like. But to go back to the original question, yeah, you know, Verstappen just didn't quite have enough in the car. I think more for the Red Bull than the driver, I'd say.
Excellent. Well, look, AVL, I want to talk to you a little bit about what you thought of the various teams' performances as they came to Australia. How much of that could be track-specific? Our colleague John Noble on one of the Friday podcasts earlier in the year said that when there's a new set of regulations and a big shift and you know, the balls are thrown up in the air, as it were, before people start to converge in terms of ideas and the cars looking the same and everyone's got their own ideas, it can mean track to track we see some different results. So the safety car restart lap 7 was Charles Leclerc, Verstappen, Hamilton was up to third by that point, Perez, George Russell, Norris and Ricciardo. But then after just a couple of laps at that stage, Hamilton by lap 9 was like 3 seconds or 3.5 seconds behind Verstappen, and, you know, the front two were just sprinting away. So there were different phases of the race where Mercedes looked a bit more racy, where McLaren had some pace earlier on, but later in the race. How much of it was track specific and your impressions of that performance they bought?
We're definitely seeing, you know, changes in the pecking order happening fairly rapidly. And I guess that's because we have been to 3 fairly different circuits to start the season, and everyone's learning about these new cars and new spec tyres and all that sort of stuff. It's maybe there's a bit of, you know, Jeddah and Albert Park, you can sort of see some consistency there. But in terms of the pecking order, like as the other guys talked about, we saw Ferrari definitely have the leg up on Red Bull this weekend. You know, we saw the likes of McLaren and Alpine definitely take a big step forward. You know, at some point the McLarens were sort of thinking that, particularly after qualifying, they're in the mix with the Mercedes, but had to concede after the race that Mercedes is still sort of a fair bit stronger on actual race pace. But, you know, if you believe Fernando Alonso, he could have won the whole thing and driven away from Charles Leclerc as well, because that's kind of what he was talking about, how gutted he was, or I forget the exact term he used, but it was, you know, after the race, you know, oh, this could have been our weekend and we could have done anything. It was quite funny listening to Esteban Ocon, you know, when after qualifying with Fernando, said, oh, you know, I could have fought for pole, and he sort of, Esteban laughed and went, I really hope that's true, because that would be great news. You know, regardless of maybe a bit of hyperbole, they've obviously taken a step forward, and maybe we've seen, you know, we saw that the likes of, you know, Alfa Romeo maybe come back a little bit, and Haas as well. So I think it's just going to keep sort of shuffling for a little while, and then we're going to go to Imola next, where teams are actually probably going to have some proper upgrades. McLaren said they bought a few little upgrades. There's been some stuff going on, but we're going to start to see proper upgrades come at Imola, and it's probably going to change again because that's a very different circuit again. So there's just so many variables at the moment that make it so difficult to sort of pick that pecking order behind, obviously, the pretty dominant Ferraris and Red Bull in second, and then sort of Mercedes on race pace somewhere sort of after that, and sort of working to you know, working on a consistency to bank points and that sort of stuff at the moment. So it's certainly very difficult to sort of pinpoint exactly where everyone is going to be. And I guess that's kind of, I don't know, there's necessarily panic and you know, Luke was in a session with Andreas Seidel after the race, and he was sort of saying, you know, yeah, there is sort of, it's not necessarily a lot of panic at the moment, because it's just going to keep shifting, because they're still learning. They're learning things about, like, how long they can run these tyres. You know, there's probably a lot more guesswork going into what they're doing than what they're used to. So if you don't necessarily get it right, it's not the end of the world.
Mary redeemed a $50,000 cash prize playing Chumba Casino this year.
I was only playing for fun, so winning this was a dream come true.
Chumba Casino is America's number one social casino experience. It's serious fun. With over 80 casino-style games to choose from, you too could win life-changing amounts of cash. Be like Mary. Log on to ChumbaCasino.com and give them a whirl. That's ChumbaCasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void or prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details. The voice in the preceding commercial was not the actual voice of a winner.
Yeah, you mentioned Haas. I think they've just, blamed setup for this weekend, a pointless weekend for them, with Mick Schumacher in 13th, Kevin Magnussen down in 14th. But have you been enjoying the start of this season in terms of everything being shaken up a little bit and not really knowing where the form book is?
Well, that's what I think that's contributed to kind of the hype of, you know, we talked about how big this Melbourne weekend was, and I think that contributed to that a lot. Obviously, Formula One has this incredible popularity that's being built on the Netflix series, and yeah, the fact that we do have this new generation of, well, we had a fantastic World Championship battle last year. We have these new generation cars. All that has fed into getting people through the gates and wanting to see this race. So I think it's probably good this wasn't the very first race of the new era, because we might not be as complimentary about the rules as we had been after Bahrain and Jeddah. But you know, it is nice to not know exactly what's going to happen. And you can probably bank that the Ferraris are going to be pretty hard to beat in Imola, but there's still so many question marks beyond that. Whereas even, you know, in previous seasons, you wouldn't necessarily say that. You could probably draw up a form guide and land pretty close to where things were going to actually happen.
Luke, tell us how you thought Sergio Perez did today. We've been a little hard on him. I think generally I've been hard on him, saying that he's been absent at times, but today perhaps doing the job that Red Bull number two drivers haven't always done, which is when their number one driver isn't there to get the points. He was right in it, had to do some on-track overtaking to get second. Luke, give us your thoughts on how Perez performed today and how he delivered that result.
Yeah, it was another really solid display, I think, from Checo. Obviously, that 20-second gap to Leclerc at the end, it's big. But realistically, would Verstappen have been a lot closer? I don't think so. I think Perez all weekend long has been on a much more even footing with Verstappen. I think even in the first couple of races, obviously, we saw that phenomenal pole in Saudi Arabia and was very unlucky with the timing of the safety car. Again, got screwed a little bit by when the safety car came out here. It meant that he lost that place to George Russell, but he was able to fight back really well. Yeah, it was a good little battle with Hamilton. He got that position, and then yeah, I was able to catch up with Russell and get him. Russell was told not to fight Perez basically because he had to save his tyres for the later in the race, which obviously, yeah, that's very sensible, made a lot of sense. But it was still a good drive, I think, by Perez to get that job done. And as you said earlier, Martin, like, this is kind of what's expected of the second Red Bull driver. Like, they're meant to be basically when you're first the first bullet in the gun, which is Verstappen misses when something goes wrong, there needs to be a sort of a rear gunner there to pick the pieces up. And I think Perez has been doing that really, really well so far this season. I think it was a really good drive from him today. And I mean, even in qualifying, he was within a tenth of Verstappen, which is great. And I think that we're clearly seeing that the issues with the Red Bull in terms of its philosophy and how difficult it was to drive and being quite on the edge, and that's really suited Verstappen. That sort of old issues with the car in previous years, that does seem to have been remedied under the new regulations. And I think it's allowing Perez to, yeah, sort of be fighting a little harder. And realistically, they should have been third and fourth today. Like, that's where they were on outright pace. Ferrari were a step in front. So for Perez to come away with P2, I think he can be really pleased with that.
Just to pick up on that point, I was just throwing back to practice. I thought it was really interesting that Verstappen, when he was sort of losing the car, he was complaining over team radio, saying it's so neutral, the car, which is, you know, it's almost like the holy grail of setup. That's what you want, a car that, you know, it doesn't understeer, wash wide, doesn't oversteer. And he was complaining about that. And, you know, it's what we've seen trackside for a couple of years. He really does like an aggressive rear end. And then they got like the ideal setup and he wasn't happy with it. I just thought that was quite a sort of amusing, almost like counterintuitive thing to see in practice.
Could Hamilton have put up much of a fight with Perez, because we saw Perez steam round the outside without DRS, made it look easy, but then perhaps went a little bit hot into the next corner, and Hamilton was coming back at him, and then we had the safety car for, what would that have been, Vettel. Could Hamilton have put up any kind of fight there? Because it looked like he was about to come back at him.
Yeah, I think it was only a matter of time, really. I think Hamilton did very well through that first stint to sort of like, yeah, keep in touch and to get the undercut on Perez and jump him like that. But no, I think, yeah, in terms of outright pace, look, Mercedes, they weren't anywhere near Ferrari and Red Bull this weekend. So I think it was never really going to, I think that fight was only going to end one way, and that was with Perez pulling ahead and getting the position.
Mercedes coming home third and fourth, George Russell on the podium. You look at the last three winners of that race, and it's not been a Mercedes lockout fest in Melbourne. It's been Bottas, Vettel, going backwards in reverse order. So coming away second in the Constructors' Championship.
I think they're just kind of maximising with a package that really isn't working, you know. So I think they would be pretty happy to come away with what they came away with. Obviously, there are some elements of good fortune to that in terms of what happened to Sainz and what happened to Max and all that sort of stuff. But at the end of the day, I mean, George Russell was second in the Drivers' Championship as well, which is staggering and doesn't necessarily bode well for a super close title battle, which is a weird thing to say three races into a 4,000 race season. But it kind of feels like, you know, it is slipping away from a lot of other drivers very quickly purely by the fact that George Russell is second. So, look, I think Mercedes will just be happy that they can't not be happy with that result. And I think it's very much the same. You look at like a McLaren, it's exactly the same. You know, you sit there and go, okay, well, fifth and sixth, what more do you want? You know, what more can you hope when you know you have the weaknesses that you have with your current car? So, and it's not the first time that we've seen Mercedes drag a result out of something at the moment. They're getting to the end of races. The thing might not be perfect to drive, but they are getting to the end of races and they're getting results. So obviously a bit of frustration from Lewis that he kind of got, you know, the safety car didn't fall that well for him in terms of George getting ahead of him. So, you know, but at the end of the day, I think Mercedes as a team, I'm sure they're not happy with the fact that third and fourth is a pretty outstanding result for them, but at least they're maximising. At least they're getting the most out of what they've got for the time being. And, you know, who knows how handy that could be. Who knows how handy those little points that you do pick up when things aren't working could be when they do start working.
Do you want to, I don't know, stick your finger in the air and take a punt at how quickly Mercedes can get on top of these issues, or do you want to not commit to that?
They're so pessimistic, and even after qualifying yesterday, you know, Lewis was in the written media pen. He was quite upbeat, but just so pessimistic, if that makes sense. Like, he was sort of laughing and yeah, joking, but he sort of was saying like, no, we're nowhere near solving this. This is not a quick turnaround. We're not going to rock up at Imola with a package that just fixes this thing. We don't know how long this is going to take where we can get on top of the porpoising and all the issues with the car and actually be super competitive. Now, what Lewis says and what happens in real life, there is sometimes a disconnect there. So there's not necessarily going to be the case, but it's just interesting that there doesn't seem to be, it's not like they go, well, there's one little thing we have to fix and then this thing's going to be right on the money. So, you know, probably the weirdest thing in the world is right now we've got Lewis Hamilton, who doesn't consider himself in the title fight at all, and Max Verstappen, who was saying today very clearly in the pen, I'm not in the title fight. It's not here. It's that we need to be, I'm so far behind now, if I'm not beating Charles immediately, I'm not going to run him down, and they're quicker than us, so I'm not going to beat him. So it's a crazy, well, I know we've lived through a couple of crazy years, but there's nothing as crazy as thinking those two guys are standing around tonight going, I don't think I'm going to have any hope of winning a world championship this year.
Yeah, that's Lewis Hamilton in fifth, 28 points. Max Verstappen in sixth with, you know, just that one finish, which is really, really hurting them. Luke, what's the impression you're getting? Because you talk to the drivers, you talk to the team, you're there. What's your impression of getting a grip of this package?
Yeah, it's clearly not one issue. That's the thing. Like, Russell might have said, okay, the porpoising is 99% of it. But Toto Wolff, he spoke yesterday and said that there's, yeah, probably lots of little gremlins in there that Mercedes have got to sort of weed out and get sorted. And the point was made to him as well that the Ferrari car, you see that porpoising, and that, yeah, it's still a very, very quick car. And the issue with the Mercedes, obviously, is that it porpoises through the corners as well, which is much more of an issue. But, yeah, I think that there's a lot of work for them to do. And like talking to the team, it's pretty, I don't know, there's a sort of a strange, not acceptance, but I think they're sort of, yeah, they understand where they're at right now. And it's like, they know how they've got to fight their way through that. And I think that the team has obviously enjoyed so much success. And it's, for a lot of people at that team, it'll be the first time where they're in a position where they can't win races or anything. So I think it'll be a humbling experience. Definitely. I think that Mercedes, I think Toto Wolff said that in those words over the weekend. And I think they just know it's not going to be an overnight fix. Like, they're not going to bring an update package to Imola and all of a sudden it stops porpoising and they're rapid again. But there is an underlying confidence that is a quick car once they can get on top of these issues. So I think for them, it's just a battle of how quickly do they do that, and does the time it takes cause them to lose more ground on Ferrari and Red Bull? But I think that, yeah, they're very, I think, again, if you'd have said to them, given what their sort of pecking order and pace is right now, that they'd be ahead of Red Bull in the Constructors' Championship after three races, I think they would have bitten your hand off.
Yeah, absolutely, Luke. Long season, though, long season. Hey, you want to take a quick break and thank our sponsors of the Autosport Podcast today, because without them, we can't make the show, we can't bring it to you for free every single Formula One weekend. And our sponsor this week is BetterHelp. Now, people don't always realise that physical symptoms that you get, things like headaches, whether it's teeth grinding, even digestive issues, can be an indicator of stress. And don't forget, things like doom scrolling, too little sleep, working too much, even sleeping too much, under-eating and overeating, all signs of stress. Now, BetterHelp said to us, can you talk about stress on the Formula One podcast? And we said, are you kidding? Even watching Formula One is a stressful experience at times, but can you imagine working in a Formula One team? Not just the driver or the team principal or the chief mechanic, but at any position in a Formula One team. Imagine being Charles Leclerc's front right tyre guy or girl, right? Or the jack man at the front of the car. The stress that that job must come with at any part of a Formula One team. Like, he's leading the race, he's going to come in, he's going to do his final pit stop, and you have absolutely got to nail your job. There can be no error. Like, the stress must be amazing. Now, stress shows up in all kinds of ways, and in a world that's telling you to do more, to sleep less, to work harder, to do the grind, BetterHelp want to remind you to take care of yourself and maybe even try some therapy. Now, in a Formula One team, of course, you win as a team, you lose as a team. I'm sure that as many of the teams aren't flying out of Australia tonight, actually on Sunday night, particularly Ferrari, this is the first proper Grand Prix, I would say, where they can celebrate. Have a couple of beers, is what I'm trying to say cryptically. You win as a team, you lose as a team. Maybe that's your support network. But if you haven't got that, maybe you want to try out something like BetterHelp Online Therapy. Customized online therapy that offers video, phone, and even live chat sessions with your therapist. So you haven't got to see anyone on camera if you don't want to. This is all about getting people in your team, in your corner, right? You can't go through life alone. You want to get a team behind you, and you can get someone from BetterHelp to help you out where you need to. It's more affordable than in-person therapy. Give it a try and see if online therapy can help lower your stress. And because you're a listener to the Autosport Podcast, that's right, you know the deal with podcast codes, you get 10% off your first month at betterhelp.com/autosport. That is betterhelp.com/autosport. Right, back to the podcast. Matt, I want to come to you and talk a little bit, rather than go in the complete order of the finishers, and talk a little bit about Ferrari, because you're going to be in Italy in a couple of weeks' time. Matt, you and Luke are doing a bit of a road trip, only because you're staying a little way away from the circuit, so there'll be a few miles done in the hire car. But look, you'll be in Italy. There's going to be, as there always is, so much pressure on the red cars and the drivers. And Carlos Sainz had a really difficult day today, started out of position. He would say not his fault, blaming the team for that. Team accepting their share of the blame on that, by the way. But as we often see, they end up going backwards at the start. And that's what he did. After the first two races where he got two podiums, Carlos Sainz having a really difficult day today. This could have been an easier 1-2 for Ferrari. What do you make of his weekend and how that's going to feed into Italy next, Matt?
Yeah, well, we'll throw it ahead to Imola, and Luke's already promised to be hot on the podcast, so the hire car stuff should be quite fun. I put in my recommendation, so I'm looking forward to that. Be good company. With Sainz, you know, he was really like quite demure in Bahrain and then Saudi, sort of not getting close enough to Leclerc, and we think, well, you've had a great start to season, but I suppose now he was more just sort of justified in being so downbeat. So, you know, he was saying like 1 minute before the cars went to the grid, or they had to leave the cars alone, that they had to change the steering wheel, and because a load of buttons weren't working, and the second one he had in didn't quite have the correct setting, so I think it was a wrong torque map, and he hit anti-steel, which meant he dropped a couple of positions straight away, and then yeah, just a bit out of whack really on those hard tyres. Didn't look much fun at all, and then where in the high speed is it? It's now 9-10, I think the correct corner designations. Now the track's been reconfigured, obviously, over the grass, and then lost it. And I thought it was quite lucky, sort of, not to be collected. But obviously, then beach in a gravel, and so downsides. You know, we all say about gravel traps, it imposes limits. But then where he's already lost it, been over the grass and spun it, it's obviously brought out that early safety car. But this is a weekend where he'll come away again frustrated, but I think he'll probably, signs I reckon, judging by some of his comments, he looks back and go, this is a weekend where it was a team that dropped the ball, not me so much. And yes, he had his struggles. I don't think he would have been a match for Leclerc again, but the way it unfolded, I think he'll step back and go, right, come on lads, that, you know, dropped a bit of a clanger there, but I did as much as I could this time.
All right, AVL, let's talk about home hero Daniel Ricciardo. A great result for McLaren today. And again, being fortunate that those ahead of them retired. Lando Norris in fifth, Daniel Ricciardo in sixth. On the TV coverage immediately afterwards, there was a suggestion that maybe Lando was carrying some issues just towards the end of the race, and maybe even a kind of hold steady between the two drivers, and a bit of, on social media, a bit of confusion why Daniel wasn't attacking more to get that one extra place. But he is, you know, the ultimate team player. They've stuck by him through hard times as well, and McLaren will be delighted. But should be some pretty happy Aussies tonight as well to see him at least back in solid points as well.
I think so. I don't think anybody was really expecting him to finish that high up. I don't know if maybe... I always feel like Daniel has a bit of a love-hate relationship with this race, because it is so much pressure and it is so hard in the build-up to the race, and he sort of pulled in every single direction and all that sort of stuff. And I think maybe the fact that the team was struggling so much, he might have come here with a little bit less expectation, you know, in terms of what he can achieve. And then they've actually gone and over-delivered for the whole weekend. So I sort of feel like he kind of enjoyed this Australian Grand Prix weekend more than I've seen him enjoy it in the past. And certainly in the race, obviously he couldn't match. He didn't match Lando in qualifying. He didn't match him in the race. But, well, sorry, he actually did match him. They pretty much ran nose to tail. You know, he pretty much sat in his DRS wake throughout the whole race. So they kind of really did manage... match each other, the two McLaren drivers. But I think in general, they were just pretty happy. And Daniel was just happy after the race that they've made a step forward. And he said, you know, I always believed we would find something. I just didn't actually think it had come this fast. So they've got to round three, and with some quite minor upgrades, they've actually made a big step forward. So that sort of points to the fact that they're unlocking potential within what they actually have, which is good news for them. So I think he was pretty happy to come away with a sixth place on a weekend where, you know, based on what we've seen previously, who knows, they could have been way outside the points and never even look like it, but they were sort of in the hunt, you know, properly in the hunt for legitimate top 10 results all weekend. And I think he kind of, you know, after what they've, particularly, you know, Bahrain and then Jeddah, that was good news.
Yeah. Can we talk a bit about McLaren's pace, Luke? And the first stint, they seemed to be pretty strong and hanging on to the pack. And then after the safety car, or maybe after the pit stops, McLaren just didn't seem to be able to keep up, and almost settled into a rhythm and an acceptance of where they are. A good points finish, and when you look at the finishing table, it looks good on paper, but is it as much of a good news story as that, or do you think they're still really struggling? What do you think, Luke?
They're very happy with how this weekend went, and I think they would obviously gladly take those points, and I think they're I think they see it as a bit like Mercedes. It's a bit unexpected, actually, because I think that they know the pace that where they are, that they're not at the front of that midfield, really. But today it seemed like they were. And Lando Norris, he spoke after qualifying and said that he put as much as 80% of the pace this weekend down to it being track specific and the track suiting the McLaren car. Andreas Seidel, I mean, even after the race today, I asked him about it and he said that, look, I think it's three things. It's okay, the track does suit our car, but also the small upgrades we've brought, they help, and also we're making up for the time lost in testing, so we've made some steps forward. But Norris, I mean, he even after the race, he kind of doubled down on the idea of it being very track specific. He said that, look, I think this is as good as it's going to get for a little while, and he said some of the tracks coming up I'm not so sure. So I think that there's it's interesting, him and Ricardo. Like Ricardo, I mean, obviously a very upbeat guy anyway, but he does seem to be putting a very positive spin on where they are, and maybe compared to Lando. But I think it's I think the pace, I mean, and I asked, because we saw in the early stages, I thought it was quite interesting when you had the sort of the two Mercs and then the two McLarens lurking just behind, pretty much running within a few seconds of each other. And I said to Lando, like, did you think you could sort of be in the hunt with them? And he was like, yeah, I did at that point. But then we saw that they were just clearly managing their tyres massively. Mercedes, they were really, really worried about tyre management today. I think that fearing that if you push too hard, that will kind of open the tyres up and then they would just drop off a cliff. So I think it's, it maybe gave McLaren a bit of a full sense of where they were, that they were maybe a bit close to Mercedes than they actually were. But come the race, it was just, come the later stage race, Mercedes just quickly ball clear and kind of left the McLarens a little bit in no man's land. But a really good, I think, points finish for them. I think they're back up to fourth in the constructors, which again is not really where they expect to be given the pace of the car and the struggles they've had in the first three races.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah, it was by lap 48, I think Hamilton had dropped the McLarens by 14 seconds, and yet 20 laps earlier, they were absolutely running in pretty close convoy, and they were catching Perez. All right, Matt, you are the latest addition to our F1 team. I will give you free choice of what we talk about next, because I've got written down in no particular order. We should talk about Alpine, Alfa Romeo, AlphaTauri, and Williams. So, your choice. What should we talk about next?
I'll go with Alpine, because I think...
Talk about Alex Albon?
No, I'm going to go with Alpine. I think first off, start with like... A little apology or at least admitting where I was wrong. And that was, it's trackside. I was looking at the Alpine and I was saying, it's understeering, it's porpoising a lot. And, I wasn't even sure if they'd maintain that sort of anonymous midfield position they've had sort of towards the front of the congestion. I thought they'd even slip back a bit. And I know what AVL was saying earlier, I completely agree with him, that these cars are so different one team to the next, and it is every chance that, one track will suit us to the design philosophy more than another. So we shouldn't get ahead of ourselves by saying, Alpine sort of are a bit stronger. But the way Alonso, obviously, and, we've heard him before saying that was the best 14th place ever seen in F1. He likes to talk himself up, but before he did get sort of caught out by the safety car and the strategy went away from him, we saw with Alex Albon how that hard tyre strategy really could have sort of paid dividends. The Alpine was looking good. Bit of a more quiet race by comparison for Ocon, but that car is still where we think it is, I suppose. Maybe they even fell behind McLaren this weekend, and definitely there's sort of a big jump up for the next team in Mercedes. But yeah, a decent enough car, and it, the execution of the strategy wasn't great, but sort of an impressive race car, and it's certainly something that I'm not going to say I was completely wrong. I know what I saw in testing. That car did look unconvincing at times. I know, but maybe they've understood it. They've unlocked it, and they've tamed the beast that I saw now.
I'm only joking with you, Q, because I agree. I think in our pre-season testing video, we were talking about who's going to be one of the more disappointing outfits this season. And I said Alpine, because looking trackside, again, it didn't look particularly great. And that we hadn't got a huge amount of confidence coming out of the team. But I think they've appears to have got the car in a pretty good window. I think Alonso is performing well, even with the Fernando Alonso exaggeration tax, that everything is sort of 10 times greater than it actually is.
I was going to say, Luke, you absolutely have to trademark that, the Fernando Alonso tax. That's brilliant.
I must say, akin to our colleague Stuart Codling, I am recycling material. I did a quick appearance on the fan forum stage earlier at Albert Park, and we were talking about Alonso, and I coined it there, and it went down quite well. So, yeah, that's going to be trademarked moving forward. For anyone else, a T-shirt or anything, you could get that. But, yeah, it's... Sorry, Alpine. I think they're in pretty good shape, and... I think like Esteban Ocon, like I think he's actually made quite a quietly and a bit anonymous in many ways, but actually a very solid start to the season. 2 7th and a 6th, 20 points on the board compared to just 2 for Fernando Alonso. So I think that's really, really encouraging. And I think Alpine, yeah, they probably overall have been, you look at that midfield fight and I think that it's going to be really close. I think that is going to sort of fluctuate as the year goes on, but they do appear to be in sort of within shouting distance to be in that fight for fourth in the constructors. So I think that's good. I do want to give a mention to Oscar Piastri as well. He's had, I think, quite a big weekend. Obviously he's only a reserve driver this year, but he had there was such a buzz around him all weekend, and so many people and fans and sort of pundits and local media all want to know, when's Oscar going to be in an F1 car? Like, is he going to be the next big thing? And we had a lunch with him on Saturday, and we were kind of talking about sort of how's like it being this weekend. And he said it was, I mean, similar to what AVL was saying about the buzz that Ricardo had around his home race and the stress that comes with that. Oscar said it was actually quite nice to be able to deal with that without the idea of, oh, now I've got to go and drive an F1 car and have to worry about that as well. He could kind of just like only worry about, oh, you would do this media thing and this and this and this. So yeah, it's been a really good weekend for him. I sorely hope we do see him on the grid for his home race next season, because yeah, he's a top talent and a good lad.
Mary redeemed a $50,000 cash prize playing Chumba Casino this year.
I was only playing for fun, so winning this was a dream come true.
Chumba Casino is America's number one social casino experience. It's serious fun. With over 80 casino-style games to choose from, you too could win life-changing amounts of cash. Be like Mary. Log on to ChumbaCasino.com and give them a whirl. That's ChumbaCasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void or prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details. The voice in the preceding commercial was not the actual voice of a winner.
I think what would be quite amazing to see about Oscar on the grid for the Australian Grand Prix, but the Melbourne Grand Prix, is that he's from Melbourne. He grew up a couple of kilometres from the circuit, you know. So during the year of the Australian Grand Prix in Melbourne, we've had two Formula One drivers, Mark Webber, who is from Queanbeyan, which is near Canberra, very long way from Melbourne, and Daniel Ricciardo, who's from Perth, lucky boy, which is couldn't be further away from Melbourne. It's 4,000 kilometres away. So, you know, it's a home race by name to a very large extent, because, trust me, it's a plane trip I have to do in a couple of days. It's a very, very long way. So if and when Oscar makes it to the Formula One grid, he's going to be the first Melburnian to sit in a Formula One car in Albert Park in the middle of Melbourne. That's going to be a really big deal for the city. It really will.
All right, I want to go to Williams next, actually, and how Alex Albon managed to get a point for his first point for Williams, a 10th place by just doing the most mega stints, running way longer than the tyres were meant to at least last. Q, let's come to you and talk about Alex Albon. How impressed were you with that today? Was it a fluke of the strategists, or did he really... Because he said he had to pull out 20-odd qualifying laps to make this work.
Well, that's the thing. That's the thing. I was looking at his times, because it's, you know, the curiosity around it was building. So I popped open the data tracker to see what was going on, thinking, you know, this is a bit odd, isn't it? But he was incredibly consistent in that sort of 1 minute 22.5 something, lap after lap after lap. And there was like, and this is, you know, around lap 48, you know, really, really deep into that stint, and the drop off wasn't coming. It was really impressive. And then so he did that bit, and then the Williams strategist sort of gave him the other half, sort of repaid his hard work and his sort of care on those tyres, because it was really like, the word cute sounds a bit patronising, but it was like deft how they did it. So to ensure he got a points finish, I think he was running in sort of, he was seventh at the time, didn't he? He stopped on lap 53/54, but as Leclerc crossed the line, so he didn't count that. And then they also, I'm sure this is not quite Williams' strategy, more sort of a coincidence, but benefited him. But Leclerc coming back to basically lap all the people that were potentially threatening to leapfrog Albon and secure that point meant they had to back out, and Albon crossed the line just ahead of Joe, who I think had a bit of a nightmare last lap or dropped a bit of time. So it worked out really well. But yeah, really impressive stint, and sort of the flip side to safety cars. We've seen it time and time again. People react to the safety cars because obviously you get a cheaper pit stop. I think, it's about an 8 second swing in the favour at Albert Park. And so, you always want to take the initiative, and make the most of that and pit. But Williams didn't do that. They just kept going and going. It was just, yeah, really, really impressive. And then, not so good on the other side of the garage, Latifi in 16th, but at least by finishing the race now, if you take out practices, he's now finished as many competitive sessions as he's had mega shunts in, so upping that ratio in his favour.
Valtteri Bottas for Alfa Romeo in 8th, Pierre Gasly, AlphaTauri in 9th, we've mentioned Alex Albon, and then it was Zhou Guan Yu for Alfa Romeo in 11th, Lance Stroll up to 12th, Mick Schumacher, the first of the two Haases, in 13th, followed by teammate Kevin Magnussen, and Yuki Tsunoda in 15th, last of the two classified finishers, Nicholas Latifi in Williams, and Fernando Alonso classified 17th, having two stopped. The last talking point that I want to get to, not a huge point, there may be nothing else to say on this, but does anybody have some thoughts, comments that you want to share on and how they are now having to look at how drivers behave behind the safety car? Because it was Mick Schumacher. I mean, it was a whisker before running into the back of Yuki Tsunoda, and that it would always be embarrassing at the very top level of motorsport. Any thoughts from you guys on whether we need to change regulations?
It was the Constantino effect, I think, that we see the sort of as drivers are backing up and weaving and slowing down and speeding up, that you're always going to have a certain element of this. And I think that they, the regulations are always looked at and reviewed and sort of what changes can be made. Niels Wittig is, he does seem to be a lot stricter, I think, than Michael Massey was in terms of enforcing rules. We've seen over the weekend, obviously, discussions about underwear and jewellery and things like that, and what drivers can wear in the cockpit, because it's a case of, yeah, you want to... I think they are really sort of clamping down, and basically they're not introducing new rules, they're just enforcing existing rules properly. And I think that even with the safety car restarts, they're kind of looking at things and saying, well, okay, what is safe, like what is fair? And I think it's something that is always going to be an ongoing process, but it definitely does feel like, I think we've got a bit of a, I'm not going to say like rules with an iron fist or anything like that, but it does feel like the FIA is now being a little bit more strict in terms of sort of how they're approaching things. Whereas perhaps in last year, I think one of the big criticisms laid against Michael Massey was that there was inconsistency. He wasn't really sure in terms of what was and wasn't allowed. Whereas now it appears that they are very quickly making it clear, like, this is what you can do, this is what you can't do, and reviewing anywhere where there might be a bit of a grey area.
All right, guys. Well, look, great to see fans on track. I love that at the end of the race, it always looks so cool to see the fans getting close to their drivers and their, their heroes and a proper fan event. It was so good to be back in Australia. AVL, we can't wait to come back. And we only ever talk to you when we're in Australia, so we should get you on the podcast more. It'd be good to have you on.
Any time. And I'll, I look forward to seeing you blokes in 12 months' time.
Hopefully before. Right, we move on. Matt and Luke will be going to Italy. They're sharing that one. So we look forward to that trip very soon. Thank you very much for listening to the podcast. If you aren't subscribed, and you surely are, but maybe you've just discovered the show, then make sure you hit subscribe in your favourite podcast app, and then you get us first and free and automatically as well. And if you are listening to this show and you know someone who loves Formula One like we do, and you'd like to share this show with them, and I ping them a note, a message, share it on social media. We always appreciate when people can say a few nice words about the podcast on their iTunes reviews as well. It helps build the show and help us grow. Thank you very much for listening today. Check out our videos like the Paddock Packdown and more from Luke on our Autosport YouTube channel. Check out motorsport.com and autosport.com to read our writing as well. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you again on the next one.
Mary redeemed a $50,000 cash prize playing Chumba Casino this year.
I was only playing for fun, so winning this was a dream come true.
Chumba Casino is America's number one social casino experience. It's serious fun. With over 80 casino-style games to choose from, you too could win life-changing amounts of cash. Be like Mary. Log on to ChumbaCasino.com and give them a whirl. That's ChumbaCasino.com. No purchase necessary, void, or prohibited by law. 18+. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details. The voice in the preceding commercial was not the actual voice of a winner. Mary redeemed a $50,000 cash prize playing Chumba Casino this year.
I was only playing for fun, so winning this was a dream come true.
Chumba Casino is America's number one social casino experience. It's serious fun. With over 80 casino-style games to choose from, you too could win life-changing amounts of cash. Be like Mary. Log on to ChumbaCasino.com and give them a whirl. That's ChumbaCasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void or prohibited by law. 18+. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details. The voice in the preceding commercial was not the actual voice of a winner.
Message and data rates may apply. Guys, got hair loss? I know what you're thinking. Should I shave my head, comb it over, wear a hat? Just stop. This isn't 1970. Keep your hair and your confidence because Bosley, America's number one hair restoration experts, can give you your real hair back permanently. Check them out today because they're giving away an absolutely free information kit and a free gift card to anyone that texts EASY to 203203. Dude, you don't have to look like your dad, because this isn't your dad's hair loss treatment. People all over the country trust Bosley because they're ahead of the curve. They use the latest technology to give you your real hair back. And the best part? Bosley's permanent solution is protected by the Bosley Guarantee. Let Bosley show you for free how awesome your hair could look with an absolutely free information kit and a gift card for $250 off. Text EASY to 203203. That's BASY to 203203.
Sports Social Podcast Network.
Hello, it is Ryan, and I was on a flight the other day playing one of my favorite social spin slot games on ChumbaCasino.com. I looked over the person sitting next to me, and you know what they were doing? They were also playing Chumba Casino. Coincidence? I think not. Everybody's loving having fun with it. Chumba Casino is home to hundreds of casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere, even at 30,000 feet. So sign up now at ChumbaCasino.com to claim your free welcome bonus. That's ChumbaCasino.com and live the Chumba life.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18+.